Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
November 2010. Local television will never be the same.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eric Thomas, and welcome to Local Sports on NNTV.
Rise and shine, Niagara. I'm Jillian Darche. You're watching Niagara Mornings on NNTV, Niagara Now.
I'm Rob McConnell, and this is The X Zone on NNTV.
An exciting new channel dedicated to Niagara is coming to cable. NNTV will be fun, affordable, inclusive, and will be distributed free through Cogeco Digital Cable. NNTV is excited to offer Niagarans a steady stream of up-to-the-minute local, regional, and international news, coupled with some of the most unique programming to ever hit the homes of Niagara.
Hi, I'm Steve Ludzik, and you're watching NNTV Niagara Now.
I'm Corey Favell from Hardcore Kitchen, and you're watching Lifestyle on NNTV Niagara Now.
Hi, I'm Nikki Moore, and you're watching Niagara Now.
November 2010. Niagara has been ignored for too long, but the time has come, and the time is now. NNTV Niagara Now.
The X Zone radio and TV show is largely an opinion talk show. All opinions, comments, or statements of fact expressed by Rob McConnell's guests are strictly their own and are not to be construed as those of the X Zone radio and TV show or in any manner endorsed by Rob McConnell, Relmar McConnell Media Company, Talkstar Radio Network, its affiliated stations, or employees.
All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
Hey, baby, they're playing a song. The one we used to hear when we used to get along. Hey, baby, they're playing our song. Let's get back together, that's where we belong. It's the one with the pretty melody. It's the one that made you fall in love with me. It made us feel so groovy.
Welcome back to the X Zone, everyone. My name is Rob McConnell. We're coming to you from our studio in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. 1-800-610-7035 is our worldwide toll-free number. Email xzone@xzoneradiotv.com. On MSN Messenger, xzoneradiotv@hotmail.com. And our website, www.xzoneradiotv.com. X-Zone Nation, we're so happy to have our next guests on. It's been too long since they've been with us. Marie and Charles Hall are with us this hour. And Charles claims to have witnessed and interacted with a race of extraterrestrials he described as tall whites while serving at Nellis Air Force Base as a duty weather observer from 1965 to 1967. In his four-volume memoirs, Millennium Hospitality, he describes his experiences as fiction, yet with a series of interviews, he claims that the experiences were real and that the U.S. Air Force were indeed hosting extraterrestrials they had reached agreements with during the 1950s, if not earlier. The tall whites are humanoid in appearance, and joining me now to tell us the other side of the coin is Marie Hall, Charles' wife. And Marie, always great having you with us, with Charles. Thank you for taking time out of your night to join us.
First, let me congratulate you on your upcoming TV show. I think that's really exciting.
Oh, thank you.
And yes, thank you for having us back again. I thought I would take people back to 1970. Mm-hmm. Charles and I have been married over 40 years, and so I am a character reference, although people who know Charles know he's a character already.
Yes, he is.
It was a couple months after we married in very early 1970. Mm-hmm. We were laying in bed one night, and we had been to a party, which Charles decided we should leave early from. He was a little cranky about whatever, I wasn't sure. But I found out as we were laying in bed, and he said, you know, those people at the party don't have a clue about things. And I said, you mean Vietnam? And he said, no, Vietnam was the war. It was what you might expect. He said, the most terrifying thing that happened to me was when I was stationed as a weather observer at Nellis Air Force Base and was on the gunnery ranges at Indian Springs.
All right, now you and I have to take our first commercial break. Marie, please stand by.
Marie
Hall
okay.
is our special guest this first part of the hour. Charles Hall is going to be my guest on the second half of this hour, Exonation. www.millennialhospitality.com. That's www.millennialhospitality.com. We'll be back on the other side of this two-minute commercial break with our special guest this first part of the hour, Marie Hall, talking about some very strange yet believable and highly credible experiences. My name is Rob McConnell. Don't go away. Hall is our special guest this hour, www.millennialhospitality.com. Charles Hall is going to be with me in the second part of this hour. But Marie, before we went to the commercial break, you were telling us how you and Charles had been at a party that night, and you're laying in bed, and Charles says, you know, they people at the party had no idea what they were talking about. You thought they were talking, Charles was talking about the people and their discussion about the war in Vietnam, but that's not the case.
Well, yes, this is when he told me that the extraterrestrials had come into his barracks that night when mm-hmm. he was on the Indian Springs gunnery range. And he said, what do you think? And I said, you know, I really never thought about whether extraterrestrials exist or not, and I really don't care. I just hope that if I ever met one, that I would behave in a manner that was a credit to the human race. And that was pretty much, you know, on my back burner for mm-hmm. the next 30-plus years. I didn't think too much about it. And then Charles had come to the end of a contract when he was 58. And about a month into a period of unemployment that was going to go on much longer, I came into the computer room, and he shut the screen real fast. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm working on a book. And I said, really? I said, I can't even get you to write three sentences to your mother. I didn't think of him as a writer. And I said, well, why don't you print some of that out for me? I'd like to read it. Mm-hmm. I went in the other room and read for about 20 minutes. And I came back and I said, how did you do this? And he said, well, I've been writing my memoirs for over 18 years. But he said, the experience was so emotional that I can practically relive it today, and so it kind of wrote itself. And I said, we're going to publish this. And he said, oh, no, I don't think so. You know, even if you don't say anything bad about somebody, mm-hmm. they can sue you. And I said, so do what authors do. Just put a disclaimer in the front of the book and change their names. And he said, well, the Air Force never told me I couldn't talk about these things, but on the other hand, they haven't been exactly forthcoming during the intervening 40 years. And I said, so change the name of the places, too. And he really just was very hesitant. And finally, I just said, Charles, you're unemployed. If the men in black come to the front door, you should go with them. It's free room and board. And then he laughed and he said, you're right. What have you got to lose? What have we got to lose? And of course, it was a lot of work on the manuscript. First of all, some of these files were on a dead but not yet buried 10-2000, so they had to be coaxed out and reformatted. I made him take the profanity out because I thought the story was so wonderful, I wanted sixth graders to be able to read it. And, you know, the other things. It was a lot of work. It was a good thing he was unemployed. But anyway, the thing that I loved about the books is that he doesn't try to prove the existence mm-hmm. of extraterrestrials. After all, it would be difficult to write a book proving the existence of God if your audience wasn't open to
That's
it.
That's right.
And, you know, the way he just walks you through it as it happened to him. I mean, he was a young kid fresh off the farm, and in, you know, the mid-60s were pretty naive times compared to today. So anyway, we've been very pleased with the reception that the books have had, and no serious tire kickers have ever come to our attention regarding his experiences. But I wanted to give you two updates that I thought were kind of interesting to us. A few years ago, an ex-NASA engineer came out to Albuquerque, took us out to dinner, and he said, I always believed everything in Charles's books because when I was at NASA, I was doing very well, and they asked me if I wanted to be in the real space program. But for that, I would have to move to Las Vegas. And he said his family really didn't want to move, so he left NASA, and he started his own company. And after the visit, he called, and he said, I'd like to fly you out here back east and put you up in a nice hotel, you know, show you around a little bit and give you $1,000 if you'll just have dinner with me and my family and a few friends. And well, we've never been there, and we said, gee, sounds like a good thing to us.
Hey, it's a paid
vacation.
We had
a wonderful time, but when we got out there, the interesting thing was he still has a hot top secret clearance, and he'd mm-hmm. been on probably every base there is. And he said he actually got to go to Indian Springs, which is now Creech Air Force Base. They changed it in, I believe, July of 2005. But anyway, he was there for a ribbon-cutting ceremony that had to do with some work that he'd done for them. And he said there were no lower-ranking people there. You know, it was all generals or high-ranking military. Mm-hmm. And he was standing next to a general, and he said, I was just wondering if I could just drive my car up that road for a mile or two. You know, I'm not going to get out or anything. And the general just said, that would be a very bad idea. You probably wouldn't come back alive. And he was pretty shocked by that. He said he'd never seen that kind of security, which apparently is still in effect today. He said, now I just want to say, Charles, that maybe you underplayed the terror of being there in your books. And then the other little story that I wanted to tell you was regarding our trip to Rome, actually the one place in the whole world that I had always wanted to visit. And we were able to visit there in 2005, late 2005. And I took the first three books from the Millennial Hospitality series. The fourth was not out yet, as a presentation for Pope Benedict.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was very much to our surprise, on February 16th of 2006, we received a letter from the Secretary of the State saying that he was directed by His Holiness Pope Benedict the 16th to acknowledge both the letter and the books. And I thought that was interesting because I had included a letter because I wanted the Pope to know that, you know, disclaimer aside, everything in the books was true and mm-hmm. happened to Charles. Now, mind you, I know the Pope has, or the Vatican Library has more about extraterrestrials than anybody needs. My purpose in giving him the books was simply that I wanted him to have our books. And so I just thought that was really nice. And, of course, probably a lot of the people who tune in to you know that there was a statement from the Vatican, I believe it was April of 2008, saying that it was just fine to believe in extraterrestrial life. Now, we don't claim any credit for that statement, but I just thought it was interesting that they had our books they made that statement.
Tell me, Murray, what does that statement mean to you and Charles?
Well, it was just very special to have been in an audience with the Pope. I mean, it wasn't a private audience mm-hmm. or anything, but it was like being at a rock concert. You know, there were groups of school children and seminarians, and the school children had cut up yardage, you know, so there'd be one group with yellow neckerchiefs and one group with red neckerchiefs, and they would be introduced to the Pope. There were cardinals up there, you know, who would introduce the groups from France in French and the groups from Germany in German. And the Pope addressed different audiences in their native language. Mm-hmm. It was just a very moving experience. So
I wouldn't say that
getting the letter was a big treat. The big treat was being there.
No, what I was trying to get at, you didn't understand me, was with the Vatican coming out and saying it's all right to believe in extraterrestrials, how did this statement from the Vatican make you and Charles feel after all the work and all the people that you've talked to over the years trying to get the message out there that we are not alone?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't want you to think that Charles and I were disclosure activists or anything like that.
Oh, no, no, I understand that.
Because, you know, we know that that kind of pressure isn't going mm-hmm. to necessarily result in disclosure. Charles is fairly certain he knows when disclosure will happen. And so we really are pretty low-key about that. And, I mean, when you know the truth, you don't care if people believe you or not.
Right.
You know, there are a lot of people who say, well, you know, don't you have any solid proof? Why didn't you take pictures? And, of course, the answer is Charles was so terrified, it never even occurred to him to take pictures. He was just trying to stay alive at the time. So we don't have, it isn't our whole life. You know, there are a lot of people who seem to be very, very much caught up in this mm-hmm. ET, UFO phenomenon and so forth. I mean, they seem to have literally dedicated their life to it. And for Charles and I, it isn't our life. Our life is our family.
Right.
We're expecting our 12th grandchild any minute.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
thank you. All right. And we are going to be celebrating our 41st wedding anniversary very soon.
All right, you and I have to take our final break, Marie. I want to thank you very much for joining us. X-Zone Nation, when we come back, Charles Hall will be with me as the X-Zone continues from our studios in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. 1-800-610-7035, worldwide toll-free. And don't forget, the X-Zone will be on NNTV starting November of the year 2010. Yeah. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the X-Zone Radio Show, live and around the world on the Talkstar Radio Network.
X-Zone Broadcast Network.
UK High Definition Radio.
Euro High Definition Radio.
And Star Cable. Our toll-free telephone number worldwide is 1-800-610-7035.
Our email address, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com.
On MSN Messenger, xzoneradiotv@hotmail.com.
And our website,
www.xzoneradiotv.com. Welcome back, everyone. 1-800-610-7035, worldwide toll-free. Email xzone@xzoneradiotv. On MSN Messenger, xzoneradiotv@hotmail.com, and our website, www.xzoneradiotv.com. Joining me now is the author of the Millennial Hospitality Series, Charles Hall. And Charles, always great having you with us back here in the X-Zone. Congratulations on your fourth book.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me on your show. It's always great. I always enjoy being on your show.
Charles, Marie was telling us some of your updates. The fourth book is out. You've been traveling, and you're going to be at a UFO event, I believe, this coming Saturday.
That's correct. I will be speaking at the UFO Watchtower in Hooper, Colorado, this Saturday, Labor Day weekend. I'm looking forward to it.
Charles, what is one of the most frequent questions you get asked when you go out and you do your speaking engagements when people realize that you are the Charles Hall who actually worked at Nellis Air Force Base and met and saw firsthand the ETs?
Well, I get a wide range of questions, but one of the most common is why I didn't take any photographs. And the answer is, you know, because when I was out there in the 60s, mm-hmm. you know, you're like 20 miles out in the desert by yourself, and you're facing the extraterrestrials. I was thinking in terms of keeping myself alive. You know, mm-hmm. To be around extraterrestrials, and you see in my books, it took me at least 6 months to get over the terror of being around them and to control my own inner fears and so on. And being around extraterrestrials, there's always a certain tension because they're not human and I'm not an extraterrestrial. And so there's always going to be, you know, things that a human might do that an extraterrestrial wouldn't understand, and vice versa. For example, and you can see it in my books, for example, in book one, mm-hmm. in the final chapter, when the extraterrestrials were inspecting the chow hall at Indian Springs, you and I as humans think that they're going to come in the front door. But see, their arms are much frailer than we are, and their hands are not meant for grasping, you know, like their thumb isn't as long as ours. So for them to grab onto a doorknob and turn it and pull the door open is extremely difficult for them, you see. By comparison, the windows, which were just a little, you know, mm-hmm. at just 18 inches or 2 feet above ground level, the windows were large and moved up and down easily, and their technology, because there's more to physics than what we as humans have, the human scientists have figured out, their technology allowed them to simply spray subatomic particles on the windows, which generates a different force field than what humans have discovered, and then that would force every piece of the window to repel every other piece. So the window would slide open if it was unlocked, even if it was locked on the inside, because it would force everything to repel itself. So the window would just slide open, see? So they would greatly prefer to open the window and walk in as opposed to coming in the door, even if the door wasn't locked. And, of course, because they are always fear getting trapped inside because they can't open the door, it has a spring on it, that means they would always post a large male guard next to the window, see, and then the women and kids and the others would go in and check out the place. Well, of course, you know, we as humans, if you're alone late in the afternoon on a base that's otherwise deserted, when we go into the back to where the food is, we're not expecting to encounter extraterrestrials because nobody's come in the doors.
Yeah.
You see? And so it's very easy for a human to be surprised or taken off guard or to panic when what they're doing is actually quite logical. You see in book four in the opening chapter when the guy that I did my first studiation with down in Nellis, when he was serving alone in the weather station at Nellis, he wasn't expecting to go. When he went down at like 12:30 at night, that there would be a group of extraterrestrials down there using the bathrooms, because you know. But mm-hmm. see, they're just flesh and blood creatures like we are. It never occurred to him that the base operations building at Nellis was the only place where you had a clean ladies' room anywhere on Nellis. It never occurred to him that a group of extraterrestrials out looking at airplanes and having fun and enjoying themselves, that when it came time when the ladies needed to go to the bathroom, that they would come up to the base operations building with their guards, open the door from the flight line and come in, post guard at the door, post a guard on the outside, and then two ladies would come in and one would hold the door open to the ladies' room while the other one used the ladies' room, because you know he's not thinking the way, he's not thinking the way extraterrestrials think. And so whenever you're around extraterrestrials, you know, I found there was always a certain tension because you always had to stop and remember, in my case, I'm not an extraterrestrial and they're not human. They're going to see things differently, even little things like doors and windows and, you know, the use of the ladies' room and so on. Mm-hmm. See, the extraterrestrial lady wasn't worried about privacy. She was worried about being trapped in the ladies' room, you see, because if the door closed and she was there all by herself, she personally didn't have the strength to open the door, you see. And so getting that point of view took a while, you know.
Did you ever at any time feel that you were in imminent danger?
Many times, yeah. Yes, many times. Sometimes I was, and sometimes it was all in my head, but many times I was terrified and worried about my life. Sometimes with justification, sometimes it was just, you know, me being afraid of the unknown. But yeah, I was, you see in my books, in the first 6 months, they were months of terror. And I mean, in an example of real danger is was the night described in book two, when I finally stopped questioning myself, because you see in the books, for the first 6 months, I thought it was nuts. Mm-hmm. I thought it was me. I thought I was. I thought that there was something wrong with my brain or the blood flow or something. And whenever they would come, I would treat them like they were real. But in my mind, I couldn't accept that they were real. I thought maybe I was hallucinating. But you see, there came a day, as I describe in book two, there came a morning when I decided it wasn't me. They were real. And on that morning, as I described in book two, I'd sat down and I'd done my homework. I'd done my thought processes, and I decided that when I went out to do the morning run, mm-hmm. that they were going to be there waiting for me, and I was right. And so when I was standing at the headlight stand, and the children came up right behind me, and remembering that their suits allowed them to float, because there's more to physics than what Einstein knows about, if I hadn't been ready for it, I'd have probably died of a heart attack or fainted from a heart attack, because, you know, they were like right looking over my shoulder, like right next to me. But I then see, after, as I describe in my books, after I'd turned around and saw the kids, and mm-hmm. and they took off, and the teacher was forced to show herself so that the children, you know, wouldn't pursue. And the teacher had said, to me, "You're not supposed to know we're here." And I said, "You know, well, I do, and it's okay with me." Then when I looked over to the wall of the Range 3 Lounge, I was expecting there to be maybe one guard at the corner, northeast corner of the lounge, and there were three of them, and they weren't the slightest bit afraid of me. And I mean, you know, when they started coming down along the side of the lounge, you know, not directly towards me, but coming down along the side of the lounge until it would be opposite me. I mean, I could see I was in real danger, you know, and you see that because after all, they were there to protect the teacher and the kids. And if I had done anything that, say, like touch the kids or whatever, I'd have been in real trouble. And you see, I was like, I was down to desperation. I was saying, you know, as I described in my books, when I at first they wouldn't talk to me, they were just coming towards me. And when I finally got to where I said, you know, I will do everything in my power to protect your children, and they finally stopped, and the lead guard said to me externally, "Always remember, so will we." And I mean, I felt like I was facing. I felt more terrified than when I was in Vietnam and I was facing the Viet Cong, you know, because, I mean, you know, aliens, they live by their own rules. And so there were many times that I was terrified with good reason. But there were also many times where if I could just overcome my fears, I wouldn't have been in any fear. I would have been in any danger. But fear of the unknown is really, you get really terrified when you're facing the unknown.
Why do you think, Charles, the governments of the world are not coming forth with the information and telling the citizens of the world that we are not alone in the universe, that we have visitors from other planets, other universes, other dimensions visiting us here, and that we should learn to live together?
For several reasons. The first reason is because the tall whites are not the only ones coming here. As I described my books, I've personally seen the aliens that I call the Norwegians with 24 teeth, and I'm also absolutely certain the grays are coming here. Mm-hmm. And see, the grays and the tall whites are natural enemies. And see, if the government were to get up, you know, like tomorrow and say, "Well, we're doing this with the tall whites," it's not just the American people, the politics between the American people and the humans that they have to be concerned with. They got to consider the consequences with the others as well. The second one is because the American Air Force's plan in the 60s was very simple. It was to do whatever was necessary to affect technology transfer between the tall whites and U.S. government, as well as the Norwegians with 24 teeth in the U.S. government, to build to their level of to build to a higher level of technology. Remember that one of the members, one of the Norwegians with 24 teeth, I'm absolutely certain, was introduced to Wernher von Braun and Willy Ley in 1949. And the original goal of the space program, Wernher von Braun and Willy Ley were asked to build to their level of technology, to the level of technology of the Norwegians with 24 teeth, who are coming here from, I believe, Bernard Star, a planet orbiting Bernard Star that's virtually, that's very much Earth-like, or the next star out, the fourth or fifth star out. And for the U.S. government to get up and say we're being visited by aliens, you have to have the technology to maintain peace and law and order and stuff, as well as the people have to be ready to accept it. I mean, it isn't just the Americans, just the American humans that, you know, would take, you know, would be, you know, the shock on the American human race. Consider the shock on, say, people living in, say, Central Asia. Well, they're not, you know, they're just now getting used to being interacting with the West. Mm-hmm. What would consider the huge shock on them if you went around there and said, yes, there's aliens from another planet coming here too? You know, you know, some of those shocks are very, you know, the shock on to the human race when you consider all the different types of humans living here in the Earth and all of our different cultures. I mean, you have to prepare the human race for it.
I guess, Charles, to put it into a little handbasket, if we can't get along together, the people on this planet, how in the name of heaven are we going to get along with people who aren't from this planet?
That's an excellent question, and I won't pretend to have an answer, because remember, there were 41 guys before me who were sent out there to the deserts of Indian Springs who couldn't take it. According to my logbooks, for the 7 years before I was sent out there in the spring of 1965, there were 41 airmen sent out there presumably on temporary tours of duty of 6 weeks, and rotating tours of duty of 6 weeks.
Charles, stand by, my friend. You and I have to take our break. We'll be right back. Exo Nation, sure. Charles Hull is our very special guest. We were speaking to his wife, Marie, previously in this hour. For more information or to order his books, go to www.millennialhospitality.com. Charles and I return after this break. Don't go away. Exonation, my very special guest this hour is Charles and Marie Hull, www.millennialhospitality.com. Charles, before we went to the break, you were saying that there were 41 other men who had gone out to the same posting that you did in the 7 years prior. You were there for 2 years. Did any of the extraterrestrial visitors ever try to become a friend of yours?
Yes, as I describe in my books, me and the teacher and Range 4 Harry and tour guide became very good friends. And I was credited with saving tour guide's life as well as saving the life of the teacher's daughter.
Wow!
And we also became friends. I also became friends with others that I don't mention too much of, like the one whose name was School Bus Driver. Those were their CIA names, and and also the one called Copilot, who wanted to be called the Mechanic, but I guess that name was taken. Remember that each extraterrestrial is a unique individual, just like humans.
Mm-hmm.
They're not clones. You have to call, whenever you talk about extraterrestrials, you have to talk about them by name, because, like, for example, the extraterrestrial known as the Captain, he was a nice enough guy, but he didn't really want, if he had his way, he wouldn't have anything to do with humans. He didn't understand humans. He didn't want to understand humans. But on the other hand, he wasn't angry towards them either. So, you know, he was just real, you know, kind of the way you are to the nearest dog, mm-hmm. or whatever. Others, like one of the generals, he was very tall, white. He was not really arrogant, but he just felt that, you know, that humans should show him a great deal of respect, the way many generals, human generals included, believe. And so, on the other hand, you had the 8th grade girl, or the preteen girl. You know, she liked it. She liked to come and play where I was, play around where I was, and she was maybe equivalent to an 8th grade girl or a girl in a freshman high school. And, you know, she would be, you know, if you didn't, I might be walking around the open spaces of Indian Springs Air Base, like on Sunday night, and turn around, and she might be like right there, like 5 feet behind me, just, you know, following around, having fun. You each one is individual. It's that way for the Norwegians with 2014 as well. Each one is an individual. They're virtually indistinguishable by humans. From humans, the Norwegians with 24 teeth are so much like us that if you're not a dentist, you'd never notice that they have only 24 teeth instead of 32. And even the grays, the little grays are the children of the adult grays. And even grays have their own unique personality. The grays tend, the adult grays tend to be very arrogant and think of us the way we kind of think of chimpanzees. But the tall whites, when you were dealing with them, each one of those, in their natural, when we first come here, they're naturally more afraid of humans than we are of them, because this is our planet where we fit in, where we breathe the air, we eat the food, and so on. And so, see, when you talk about, you know, politics and dealing with them and becoming friends with them, it's more than just that the human has to overcome, you know, like as I described in my books. It was more than that I had to overcome my fear of them. They had to overcome their fear of me, too. Now, some, like the teacher in Range 4 Harry, had been here for like 200 years and weren't afraid of humans.
Wow.
Others, like Pamela, and that was like a difficult process, getting her to overcome her fear of humans.
Charles, you and I have just run out of time for tonight. We'll have to have you and Marie back on when we move to Niagara. I want to thank you very much for joining us, Charles. Give my best to Marie, and congratulations on your newest addition to your family that you're expecting to hear the news about any second now. Take care, Charles.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Okay.
So long, my good friend.
Thank you for having me.
Charles Hull, www.millennialhospitality.com. We'll be back after this break, X-Zone Nation. Don't go away.